If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, Sean Luke.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Back where I belong, standing on my standing mat.
Yeah, you've got one of those like artificial butt fat mats on the ground.
Butt fat mat?
It's got that like butt fat texture. It's like nice and mushy.
Butt Fat Matt is like a unpopular name of a Garbage Pail Kid card. Check out Butt Fat Matt. Why is his butt so fat?
I like those mats. I never had one before.
Yeah.
I don't have a standing desk. Should I get a standing desk?
I love the standing desk. I was not an early adopter to this back when I was working in an office full time.
Yeah.
You know, you started to see them. And honestly, so much about what's shitty about office culture is what's shitty about society anyway, which is like, why does that person get something different and I don't?
Yeah.
Like that was kind of the vibe that pervaded the office. Like, oh, Stacy in accounting is standing at her desk. What makes her so special?
Yeah. But then the reverse side of it is if you're like a sitting at your desk person and the person next to you gets a standing desk, it's like, yeah. Okay, now all of their farts are like at nose level.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to deploy the standing desks equally, especially in the same cubicle.
Yeah.
I think you want to get everyone up or down.
I was reading about one that has a button on the side and it goes from sitting to standing. And I was like, I was mainly intrigued in just the audacity of the idea that I would have my act together enough that a desk could change height and everything wouldn't like unplug and fall off of it, you know?
I was thinking the same thing. Like I'm a maniac about cable management and I don't have my shit together well enough to ensure that even when I pull my desk out from the wall for some reason, that yeah. Shit doesn't go crazy.
Yeah, I might explore that at some point. I get a sitting chair though, so if I got a, you got a nice tall chair for your standing desk.
Yeah, I chose my nice chair based on the height of my desk.
Yeah.
But I also chose the height of my desk and the height of my chair based on a job I no longer have. Like back when we were editing for 8 to 14 hours a day,
yeah.
Like the stand ended up being therapeutic. You wanted that, but I don't keep the same hours that I used to in front of a computer, so I'm wondering if maybe I'm doing more harm than good by standing in one place as often as I tend to do.
It's interesting because when we go on tour, we always have a table and we sit down. And one thing that we experimented a little bit with on our last tour was starting the show on foot,
mm-hmm.
coming out and standing up and talking for 5 or 10 minutes, doing our mm-hmm. Marin Open.
Yeah.
On foot and then going and sitting down and doing the rest of the show as we would seated, except for that's the natural podcasting position for me. It's not for you. You've always been a stand to podcast.
Boy, did I resist that idea. When you proposed that the first time, I was like, you are a maniac. Why do you want to, like, we just got rid of all our complications for our live show. And now you're trying to add complications back in where the old complications used to be.
I'm always thinking of new ways to make our lives slightly more challenging.
But when we tried it a couple of times, I think the the effects were clear. It was fun moving around the space. Here's the thing about going and seeing a live podcast show or performing in a live podcast show. It's a table on a stage.
Yeah.
It looks weird. So getting out and walking around actually feels pretty good.
Yeah, it was nice to do. Having a wireless mic was really fun because you could also like take it with you in the middle of a show and do something on the stage that we might not have done otherwise. But, looks like you got yourself a brew dog today.
I have a root brew dog, Ben.
A human drink.
Root brew dog. Oh, yeah?
You ever go to a restaurant and, you know, you get the food and the side and a drink, but you know full well you're not going to have that drink with the food. This is a food visit, and you're going to take that drink in the car or home. Mm. I went to a hamburgers place that sold fancy root beers.
Okay.
And I was like, that looks really good, but I do not want to take on a fancy root beer and a hamburger and fries.
How were the fries? Were they the best fries in Los Angeles?
How dare you? The best fries in Los Angeles are at Burgermaster in Seattle. And that might always be true.
Wow. So they brought it to your table but did not open it. So that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So I ended up just taking it home and saving it for later. I mean, that's like a lot of calories on calories.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a late afternoon. So I was like, I'm going to give myself a little treat later. And treat time is now.
It's so bubbly, cloy, and happy. It's vile.
Hell yeah. You deserve it, buddy. You deserve it more than anyone.
Ah, come on. It's like that scene in Shawshank Redemption, you know? Nothing makes a person feel like they're working hard on a podcast like tarring a podcast roof and taking down a root brew dog. That's how the dialogue goes, right?
So weird that you're... So we're in the middle of recording. We're recording two things today. We recorded an episode earlier. We took a 7-minute break, and now we're recording second episode of the day. Mm-hmm. In between, I got up, opened a package full of vacuum cleaner bags, reloaded the vacuum cleaner bag in my vacuum, and took a pee. Uh-huh. In that 7 minutes, I listened to a chunk of an episode of Stop Podcasting Yourself where they were talking about the scene in Shawshank when they were drinking beers on the roof.
What the fuck?
I don't know how that happens.
This is Maximum Fun Podcast Ouroboros where, like, Greatest Generation is eating their tail.
Yeah, except for you didn't know that.
No.
I did. You're the one that brought it up. I'm sitting here tripping balls, man.
I'm the one that brought it up.
We got to text Dave and Graham and let them know about this Ouroboros thing that just happened. They're going to be totally indifferent to it.
Yeah.
Love those guys. That's a
best in the biz.
A fave show of mine.
The only Max Fun show putting more bonus episodes into the bonus feed than we are.
I know.
Are them.
They're kind of taking our lunch money on the bonus feed thing. But they were talking about how they must have gotten like a director that mainly works on beer commercials to come in and shoot second unit for that scene because the beer looks so fucking refreshing.
Yeah.
It's real, you know, wait till you see the pool energy when those beers start coming out of the bucket.
Yeah. God.
We were the lords of all creation.
So great. Great scene.
Great scene.
Sure makes the warden's lackey look like a great dude, you know?
Yeah.
Drink up while it's cold, ladies.
Good job.
He was great in that, and then he was great later when he enlisted as a buck private so that he could go to war against the bugs in Starship Troopers.
I turned off Shawshank Redemption after the roof scene. I don't know what happens after that, but I felt good about it. I think I saw enough.
They go to Klendathu after that, I'm pretty sure.
That's a pretty fun game. What is the front half of one movie that you could bolt on to the back half of a second movie one actor and their character as the pass through?
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Well, speaking of people that are from space dressing up like Nazis, Adam, do you want to get into today's episode of Voyager?
Got a bucket full of root brew dogs here. I'm ready to go, Ben.
Hell yeah.
It's Star Trek Voyager Season 4, Episode 19, The Killing Game, Part 2.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning to rock.
The captain and Seven of Nine have to head to the ass lab to do some work on this whole the bad guys have taken over the ship situation.
This scene was so funny to me because what is that dude doing in there at the controls? Like, he's a projection of a human person. He's like, yeah. He's a Nazi guy. What's he doing at that station? He's
getting intel from the ass lab.
He seemed like a broken non-player character in an open world video game.
Right. That's like stuck in a corner.
Yeah. He doesn't belong there.
They're getting some intel. They're figuring out where the Banes are, like where the Nazis are, where the Allies are, where everybody is all over the ship. And they realize that they can actually potentially retake the ship if they enlist the help of simulated characters from the holodeck. There's only like 89 Banes on board, and there's holo projectors everywhere. So if they team up with holo allies, they can potentially get their ship back.
Viva la France!
Is the reason they don't number check the amount of troops available because there are an infinite amount of them that would just be projected as coming like wave after wave?
Wow, yeah. I don't know.
I wondered that because they're so specific about the number of Banes, but I was like, hey, give me the read on how many troops are on board, and no one says it.
Right. How many like of the armored division that Chakotay is in charge of are there? How many SS troops?
Yeah.
I want to know.
Yeah. Yeah. So the plan at this point is to disable all of the interfaces. And the only place you can do that is on 6-Bay. We know this.
Yeah. The surgical computer where the doc kept working on unhooking the captain's neural interface is the thing that is controlling everybody's neural interface.
It makes sense that the one piece of gear that has kept track of everyone's neck, back, pussy, and crack is a medical device in 6-Bay, right?
Right, yeah. Kim wants to blow out the whole network. He's explaining this to Alpha Bane. Like, listen, like, your little adventure here has gotten totally out of hand. Now the holo inmates are running the very real asylum that is Voyager. So if I just overload the whole network, blow out every holo emitter on the ship, it will shut down the madness and, you know, we can stop this war. And this guy's like, no way, man. I want this ship as a prize, not just because it'd be a great prize that would prove I'm a really good hunter, but like, I want the holodecks to be working specifically.
Right. I mean, Carr, love him or hate him, like, he stays true to his values the entire way.
Yeah.
He is not changing his mind about the whole holodeck thing.
He's a real iconoclast.
Yeah.
I love the, like, this happens occasionally where, like, a captain will be in their riding outfit and get called up to the bridge or whatever.
Yeah.
He's in his Klingon armor, like, guys in SS uniforms come, like, report to him and, you know, are giving him updates on how the battle is going. There's, you know, the Klingon simulation in Holodeck 2, there's the Nazi simulation in Holodeck 1. It's all getting mixed together. It's a total mess.
Carr gets to wear the most costumes of any character this episode, right? Because he wears Bane, he wears Klingon, he wears Nazi.
Yeah. There's the part where he's in a vineyard wrestling in the mud with his brother, where he wears like brown overalls and a big hat.
Famously, an episode not called Brothers. As badly as we want it to be called Brothers, not what it's called.
That's not what it's called, it turns out.
You have to learn to live with it.
The way to solve any problem like this for Banes is more Banes. So that's the order that he gives his beta. And down in Holodeck 1, a lot of the crew are still neurally uplinked, and so they believe themselves to be in France in the 40s, and they believe that the thing that they blew up in the building in the village of St. Clair is some kind of secret Nazi bunker that they, like, missed on all the intel. Like, Tuvok and Chakotay are talking about this, and they're like, boy, am I humiliated that we did not know that the Nazis had a extremely advanced, like, weapons experimentation lab here in town.
I'm so glad you're catching me up on all this, Ben, because I stopped listening as soon as I saw Tuvok in that very comfortable-looking black sweater. I wanted that sweater.
It did look comfy.
Yeah.
I mean, One of the big shames about living in LA is there's almost never good sweater weather. I have so many good sweaters from my time in Brooklyn, and they sit in a drawer.
The cut of most sweaters does not do a person any favors in the V-shaped torso department. But I got to say, Tim Russ looks pretty jacked in the sweater.
He's sweater buff.
Yeah.
That's a big amount of buff.
That's what I'm saying. He can really fill up that sweater.
Yeah, it's really nice. So, you know, the Razzie Stance and the American troops are working together. And, you know, Brigitte, BLT, is trying to, like, argue for, like, hey, let's maybe chill out now that we've discovered that there's, like, an extremely advanced weapons lab with, like, metals we don't recognize in it. And just, like, calm down while we figure out what's going on here. And Chakotay's like, no, man, like, this is time to press the fight. We need to neutralize these Nazis.
Yeah. There's a line of dialogue here that was really funny to me, which was,
this restaurant will serve as our command post.
I want to use that over on our hit bonus feed podcast, Factory Seconds.
Oh, that's a great idea. We should make that into a real show.
It's a real show to me, damn it.
So the resistance have hid caches of weapons all over the place, and these may be helpful to the Allied troops. And Brigitte is going to show Lieutenant Paris where some of these weapons stockpiles are.
We gotta have Weps. He's the key.
Got to.
Weps are the key. And as they're discussing this, the captain shows up through a tunnel under the bar to Jeffrey's tube that leads into the holodeck. And boy, this was fun.
What is that? Some kind of an escape tunnel?
That's precisely what it is.
I mean, decades later, this would have been a mini fridge.
Right.
As it is, it's hard to figure out, like, it's got a door.
Yeah, it's just like under bar storage. It's probably where they keep, like, extra clean glasses or something.
I love the idea that things like this were hiding in plain sight on every holodeck program we've ever seen. Like, if you were to roll over a stone, like, you would see an interface or something. Or if you knocked on a tree, a panel would open up and you could, like, go into a Jeffrey's tube. This is always here.
Yeah. I mean, like, in the past, the holodeck equivalent of hitting pause and going into the interface has been calling for the arch.
Yeah.
And I like that Voyager has just kind of dispensed with that. That's not something that the Voyager holodeck bothers with.
That's a great call. Yeah, the arch is obsolete. Everything is arch.
It's oops all arch.
Yeah.
They're like holding their guns. They're ready to blast the captain. She comes in with 7 of 9 and she's like, hey, I'm actually the leader of the resistance. Please don't kill me. And they're like, oh, cool. Great. Well, now that you're here, let's talk about our cool plan to fight the Nazis.
And this is Janeway's turn to act like the character she was previously.
Yeah.
This is an interesting tension that pervades the whole thing.
Everybody's shocked that she had 7 survived. They're like, we watched that building explode. Like, how are you here?
And there's some sort of like 7 of 9 splashover suspicion.
Right.
Where like if they were together and 7 was suspected of being a spy and now Janeway trusts her to the extent that they're like going in secret tunnels that no one knew about before. It kind of makes Janeway's position seem a little bit dangerous.
Yeah. Tuvok is like, don't like this.
He racks another round.
Yeah, yeah. And also Janeway is advocating for a much less destructive approach to dealing with the Nazis. She's like, no, don't call in the airstrike on the quote-unquote bunker. It's full of warheads that could explode this whole valley. It's like there's experimental weapons in there that, you know, like the description, nobody says nuclear weapon, but like the description that she's using sort of evokes that, like an unimaginably destructive thing could happen and everybody here would die if you call in this airstrike. But don't worry, I've got a plan and it involves bombing a very specific surgical console in 6 bay.
Our course is locked in.
Do it. Listen to me very carefully because I'm only going to say this once.
Do it.
It's so funny to experience the disconnect of someone who looks like Janeway talking to someone who looks like Chakotay, having to dumb it down for him and his feeble greatest generation mind, you know, like giving him the notes because he won't really get it.
Yeah.
Well, but it's Chakotay.
As someone who has a feeble greatest generation mind, Adam, I really appreciated it.
Yeah. But this is what's so strange about this scene is that like Chakotay has to shift gears from leading the charge to providing cover for Janeway's resistance when it was like, just a scene ago, he was like, we're leading. The resistance needs to get out of our way.
Yeah.
Just tell us where all your hidden weapons are. But he's down for this in a support role.
I'll be right behind you.
To his credit, he switches gear really quickly. And the plan is the C company, the guys that he's in charge of, are going to clear some corridors so that the captain and Seven can get to Six Bay. And they just need to talk about corridors on the ship in terms that a 40s army man will conceive of as Nazi bunker.
Right.
And they've got enough holographic explosives to do the job, but Seven has the idea of also modifying some of these grenades with Borg technology.
This was so frustrating because so much of the episode is spent watching Seven tinker with weapons, and I'm like... Oh, this is going to be great. Once she gets these weapons going and shooting Borg plasma at people, we're going to see some serious shit. Cut to the end, we never see that. It's a huge bummer.
Yeah, she's tinkering with the grenades in this scene, and Tuvok comes up to the captain and is like, hey, so is she working with the Germans? And I like this a lot because the captain has no memory of any previous conversation about this.
Yeah.
So she still has to play along and she's like, no, we can trust her. And Tuvok is like, what are you talking about? Like you were getting ready to kill her.
Yeah. Yeah. They get the scene interrupted though by the war reaching their doorstep and everyone has to kind of bail out through that door behind the bar.
In Six Bay, some Banes show up with a Bane that has minor injuries. And the doctor's like, okay, well, I'll get to that once I'm done fixing this guy right here that's bleeding out.
A burn is not a minor injury, Ben. That guy was in great pain. He was burned.
The other guy's losing blood, Adam. Why are you advocating for the Bane?
I'm not. I mean, the Bane's advocate is this nurse who's like, hey, new policy, Bane's to the front of the line, no matter what.
And he shuts off the doctor. He doesn't like, he doesn't want this lip at all.
Yeah.
I mean, this is going to piss off Alpha Bane, right? Because Alpha Bane is like advocating for, you know, patch these guys up and throw them back into the simulation every single time. And Nurse Bane is like,
from now on, leave the wounded prey where they fall.
What he's doing is in direct contravention of his orders. Are orders orders or are orders not orders?
Orders are orders.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's what I think.
But he was only following orders? Or he's not following orders? Maybe he's good.
He was only sent to take pictures. Ben, there's something missing from this scene that I know there's no time for, but like you're made to feel great anxiety through the entire episode because of the stakes. But pain is being talked about so often without seeing pain.
Right.
Like if we whipped over to Ashmore and we saw like half of his face had been charred, that's an effective way to feel something else. Like it's not just the anxiety of the stakes, but it's also the pain you're meant to endure in a wartime type of context.
Yeah.
And that aspect is missing throughout both halves of this episode, I think.
It's interesting that you bring that up because that is the specific injury that the Bane extra that they bring in has. And we don't even get the sense that he's experiencing much Bane pain.
Right.
And if he got hit on the head, you don't even really know whether that would count as Bane brain pain.
I mean, especially if that was a character that walked through a plate glass window, because then that's pain, Bane. Brain.
Whoever edits that will have to just put those words in a order that makes more sense than the order you said them in.
What should it be?
Pain
brain bane.
Pain brain bane pain.
Pain brain bane pain.
Yeah.
that get delivered onto like a high floor of a building, it would be pain brain bane pain crane. Nobody's listening to this podcast anymore. I'm just watching our download numbers go to zero.
You know what? We just do it for us from now on.
The last episode, we had a little cameo from somebody named Neelix, the Talaxian.
Yeah.
And we get to see a lot more of him in this one. He's out camping. He's doing some camping with some other Klingons. They're getting turnt.
The thing about camping with Klingons is you can't expect to not just sleep straight up in the dirt. Like, there are no comforts to a Klingon campsite.
Oh, yeah. Come on. An inflatable mattress is for pataks.
You're lucky if you're not sleeping in the fire.
These guys are really getting hammered, man. They are going at it.
Yeah. Kanelix is getting absolutely smushed on the blood wine, and they're all getting drunk enough to just fight with each other, and they're supposed to be friends.
This is the eve of battle. I would definitely at least have a broad on the eve of battle. I wouldn't want to go into battle with a hangover.
Yeah. I've started telling my wife when I'm like extremely drunk that I'm smushed instead of smashed, which is like an escalation upon smashed, which is its own thing.
Right.
Drunk, smashed, smushed is the scale. And she loves that.
Oh, yeah. It's like the color-coded terror alert when we were going through the early 2000s. Like, nobody's quite sure what any of it means, but it seems to be important to someone in the government.
We're kind of in orange a lot for some reason.
Yeah, it seems like we kind of oscillate between smashed and smushed, and we'd like to know like how freaked out we should be about those two things.
Back on Voyager, Kim is making his way through a corridor when he encounters a Nazi, but he gets saved by Paris.
He did not see that coming.
But it's not Paris.
I mean, it's Paris who believes himself to be an American soldier.
You speak English?
Yeah, I speak English.
Here's something I didn't imagine saying on our show or in public or ever. I love the implied racism of this scene.
Yeah, I sort of wondered how deep into that it would go because they're suspicious of Kim because he presents himself as an American who is out of uniform, which, you know, does not compute.
Right.
But also there is the like internment of Japanese Americans that like you could imagine the character that Tom Paris inhabits believing to be a good thing, and that should apply to Kim. Like, I sort of wondered if this episode was going to entirely pull its punch about like World War II and the Nazis, because it doesn't get all the way there in this scene, but it goes pretty deep later. So
it was
interesting moment.
Could you have passed the Betty Grable test? That's tough.
No, I mean, I feel like you're kind of 50-50, right? Like, what would you be staring at? Like, implies that you're looking at the front of a lady.
Yeah, so you can remove butt, plausibly.
Yeah.
Unless she's got a great big butt that you can see from the front.
Yeah, unless she keeps it juicy and eats that lunch.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think that guys in the 40s were really talking that way.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah, so he passes the Betty Grable test and gets to not get taken prisoner or something.
The Betty Grable test is not anything like the Bechdel test, right?
Now, I think a lot of people consider it to be kind of the opposite of the Bechdel test.
I know you don't want to do it.
Coffee black.
Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
Janeway and Chakotay are making their way through Jeffrey's tubes on their way to Six Bay and kind of comparing notes about, you know, what it's like to be in command of a platoon or whatever. And it's a heavy moment where Chakotay's character, you know, expresses something that Janeway really identifies with, which is I'd do anything for those guys, get them home safe.
It's got to be a trip to hear Chakotay talk like this while not being Chakotay. As if there's some of him in there somewhere.
Yeah, and that was another thing from the last episode that I wondered if would get explored more. Like, are these neural interfaces like not 100% effective? Are they like starting to fail as the simulations go on longer and longer or something? But it doesn't go that way. Instead, Janeway's like, okay, you're about to meet some real fucking weirdos.
There are eccentric people who live in the caves, but don't be alarmed.
They're weird.
The biggest mental leap you need to take in this episode and maybe the whole season is that Chakotay as U.S. military officer does not freak the fuck out at seeing this scene around the campfire.
Yeah. They come upon Neelix and his drunk Klingon buddies who are initially extremely suspicious that, you know, somebody penetrated their perimeter and, you know, are talking shit like they know what the Klingon battle is, but they, you know, they're shouting out houses that don't even exist.
Captain Chakotay has crawled through 20 yards of Jeffrey's tube and pops out the other side 20 light years from France. Like, he does not comment that he is so far out of town that that he's practically on a different planet, and he's confronted by Kenelix.
Yeah.
Sunro Tapota Cha!
I guess my French is a little rusty.
Kenelix wants to like prove that you're not a cop kind of moment when he tosses the canteen full of blood wine to Chakotay. But for some reason, Chakotay gets out of drinking the blood wine, despite like that being like explicitly what the Klingons have challenged him to do.
I hated this moment. Like, I did not want her to talk him out of it, and I did not want him to listen to her. I wanted to cut back to a drunk Chakotay.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I wondered if that was the rare moment of actual sensitivity to Native Americans expressed by this show, like the ugly stereotype of the drunk native being something that they didn't want to get into.
I did not think of it that way, but that's a really great call.
Yeah, it's just a weird moment. Like, it kind of made me wish that they'd like swap Chakotay and Paris.
Am I making any sense here?
Just so that somebody could get super hammered on blood wine that was from the 40s and couldn't handle it.
Does everyone know that blood wine is twice as strong as whiskey? When Janeway says this, I was like, whoa. I had guesses about its strength, but I didn't know it was like that.
Couldn't he just take a shot of it and be like a little buzzed, but not completely fucked up? Like, how?
Yeah, Chakotay, you don't have to inhale. Like, no one can see through the bladder of blood wine.
Right. Yeah. You could just make it look like you took a big drink.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's what he does. Maybe when she goes around the corner and like wipes the moss away from the Elkar's display, he's like persuading them that he's drinking a bunch of booze that he isn't actually.
Wanted more of this scene.
Yeah. Well, Janeway finds a computer, uses it to cause the doctor to appear in there. The doctor is now like entirely in resistance mode because he's no longer allowed in Six Bay, which makes me think that there's a lot of crew members just bleeding out over the course of this episode, because I don't think Nurse Bane is you know, super helpful with those guys.
Yeah.
They're talking about, okay, we need to blow up the surgical console and we've got all these bombs and we're going to like climb through Jeffrey's tubes under the surgical console and set these bombs.
I love the obstacle of, you know, I thought we could just blow up the console without needing to access it. But the idea of it being shielded, requiring someone to go into Six Bay, I thought was a great alt.
A great heightening of the tension, because that plan that they came up with at the beginning is not something that is just getting sorted over the course of the episode. It's like new hurdles are thrown in their way at every turn in this episode.
And that's a quality to war movie math, too.
Right.
Often the mission as accomplished ends up being very different from what is sketched out in that initial scene, you know?
Yeah. So they've made friends with these Klingons and have persuaded the Klingons that there's an even cooler battle that they could get involved with if they come with them. And we cut back to the village of St. Clair, where the restaurant has turned into a sort of besieged spot where the soldiers and the resistance are barely holding off the Nazis while they set up a machine gun emplacement across the street.
Tuvok is still suspicious of Seven of Nine here. He will not let it go.
Yeah. She comes back alone, and being in his presence and not in Janeway's presence is not great for her.
Yeah. And she doesn't have the social wherewithal to get how dangerous her position is.
Yeah. And like, when he's like, what are you doing? She's like, well, I brought this like lunch pail full of German technology from their compound. That doesn't like smooth things over at all.
But the descriptions and instructions are all in German, and you're just able to use all of this stuff and know what it does? Huh.
She's like, I studied German in high school.
Yeah. Elsewhere in town, BLT's baby daddy and Taranj are taking cover, and he asks Carr for authorization to use nucleonic charges. This seems like an escalation to the thing. And Carr from the bridge is like, no, what did I tell you before? Instead, I'm going to send you more hunters.
Yeah. Alpha Bane wants his holodeck in good working order. He's not going to blow up the entire holodeck just to win this war. And it also kind of comports with something he was talking about in the previous episode, which is like his interest in there being sort of an even footing between hunter and prey. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't think it's fun to hunt when you're just like completely outgunning your prey. So, you know, Beta Bane really looks like an asshole in this scene in front of his boss.
It's no fun to play Madden football on rookie.
No. No, come on. You can go to the Super Bowl every time.
It's not fun to play it on all Madden either. You just want something in the middle.
Yeah, nice even challenge.
Right.
The captain and Chakotay make it to Six Bay, and it was driving me nuts that they didn't just kill Nurse Bane.
I know.
Like, why spare this guy?
He clearly sucks. He might be more dangerous than most other Banes on the ship.
Is it part of the kayfabe of like, we have to follow the Geneva Convention or something? Like, she would get shot by Chakotay if she was acting too crazy or something?
Don't love that.
Yeah.
I don't love that unexpressed anyway.
I wish that they'd explained it a little further because I, you know, defensive ship felt like a totally valid reason to take this guy off the board.
I love that Nurse Bane is like, you know, you could just turn on the safety protocols and really make my job easier. And Kara's like, I can't!
He and Chakotay go out in the hallway. Chakotay is like, you know, suddenly surprised by a bunch of Banes coming around the corner, and Nurse Bane runs back, shoots the captain, and can't turn off the explosion before he explodes himself.
It is so weird to see firearms being deployed on a Starfleet vessel.
Yeah.
And to hear them and to see their effect. Like when Janeway gets shot in the leg with a fucking gun.
It just
hits different.
Yeah. I also just loved how well Kate Mulgrew sold the like, oh shit, a guy just came in. I need to grab my gun. And I like dropped it.
Yeah.
Because I grabbed it with the wrong hand. Like, she doesn't know firearms that well.
It's great.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So this guy is off the board. It kind of made me wonder if everyone in Six Bay is off the board. Like, did they blow up a bunch of their own crew members? Or was that a more local explosion than it looked?
Because
it blew the door out into the hallway.
That's a dark question.
Yeah.
Pretty cool they made a miniature of that door.
Yeah.
And then blew it up on a studio backlot.
Yeah.
Cut in just fine.
I've got to get that platinum. Get that
low enlargement.
I've got to get that platinum.
What now?
Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
Mother's Day is coming up. And one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can. And it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one, an Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use. And I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Everybody's neural transponders go out at once, and a crew is back. It's about halfway through the episode. Everybody knows who they really are.
Yeah. At that exact moment, Taranj enters the fray with backup.
Yeah. Some of the Nazis and some of the other Banes come in and take Tuvok, BLT-7, and Paris hostage. And hostage is very much how they are described for the rest of the episode.
The Nazis, famous for their treatment of hostages.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just following the Geneva Conventions to the letter.
This is a scene that is notable mostly for BLT's condition, the condition of her pregnancy, because...
This is amazing to me.
Because the holographic projection has projected pregnancy inside her body.
Yeah, so that means in the other one, when the captain was the Klingon, it was projecting pigment onto her skin. Yeah. It was projecting loaf onto her forehead.
Yeah.
It's projecting a baby that she can feel kicking.
I mean, at what point is it not a simulation and more like an actual recreation of a way of being? This is like technology that Nathan Fielder could be using on the rehearsal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is like technology that like a high school health class could use to way greater effect than trying to carry around a sack of flour for a week.
Yeah, that sack of flour is not wet enough.
So Beta Bane guy is like, all right, I'm getting ready to kill all the prey now that your little thing has failed and all of the neurotransmitters are down. And Alpha Bane is like, no. I need them. They're hostages, and they're all the leverage we have to get these other guys to fix the ship up and turn this thing into the hologram hunting preserve that I want to turn it into. So, seal up that door and keep those hostages safe. And boy, Beta Bane just like rolling his eyes.
Yeah, this sucks. This sucks for him.
Does not like. I will say this for the Hirogen, Adam. They are convincing the Nazis not to kill people in this episode.
Maybe if we had a few more Hirogen around World War II, things would have ended up differently.
Yeah. There is a pretty wild scene where Paris is like describing what Nazis are to Seven of Nine and compares them to the Borgs and says, no offense. And she's like, no, none taken, none taken. Don't mind being compared to a Nazi at all.
Mm.
Yikes, Seven of Nine.
Yeah, when you don't mind being compared to Nazis, I think that's when you've lost the moral high ground. Back on Holodeck 2, we're told fairly early on, two Holodeck programs are going, the Klingon 1 and 2, the World War 2 1 and 1.
Yeah.
And that's what's so confusing, right? Put World War 2 in Holodeck 2.
Whoa.
Put the Klingon 1 in Holodeck 1.
That's what they should have done, because it's a Klingon 1. So it shouldn't be in 2, it should be 1.
Right. So Kenelix is in there feeling a little more like Neelix.
Dr. Trouble. Now what?
Yeah.
And he warns the doc that you are not going to want to experience these Klingons waking up hungover. What are we going
to
do?
Yeah, because they want to be led, and Kenelix is the person that they imagine will lead them.
Yeah. Boy, they couldn't be more wrong.
Yeah.
They're about to be very disappointed with Neelix leading the way and the doc covering their flank, which is how the distribution of tasks go.
I love the doctor like swishing the knife around in the air like, you guys gonna get what you asked for.
Yeah.
Asking me to cover the flank.
How many seasons ago was the doctor a brave knight? It seems like forever ago and he's entirely forgotten.
Yeah, that was a long time. Well, up in Janeway's office, she is brought before Alpha Bane, who has brought in some like Netflix grade interior designers.
Yeah.
I see you've done some redecorating.
Carr offers Janeway a side of hush puppies to go along with her fish and chips.
We give you lots of reasons to love us.
It's been Herogenized. And he's like, you know, like, I've got this great plan going. You're a very dumb prey. I've fought way better than you, and I don't want to explain it to you. But I have this grand vision for the Herogen, and I need your ship to do it. So I just like you. What you need to understand is that I will kill everyone that I don't need to make this vision happen. I have all the hostages I'm going to need. And she's like, good luck, you fucking prick.
We'll destroy this ship before we surrender it.
What's great about Janeway is that she's always willing to hit the button and blow up the ship. She's like, that's cool, you have this insane plan, but I would rather die myself and blow up the ship and so would everyone on the crew than let you go through with this. And it's funny, like, after saying this, Carr's like, but I still want to tell you about my philosophy. I really want you to know.
I mean, she persuades him that he underestimates her, and to his credit, he like reevaluates and explains his philosophy, and she's like, you could have just asked, man. Like, we could just trade technologies.
Yeah.
Like, I admire what you're trying to do. For sure. Hunt holograms and not people.
The Banes are the Binars. World War II is Minuet.
Y'all just want to fuck Minuet.
Yeah. That's what this whole thing is.
Then, like, take it from me. Wolf 359 is really going to drive your guys wild. Like, that's some crazy shit right there.
There's nothing sexy about Wolf 359, though. That is just a blood and guts battle right there.
Yeah, it really is. I was very surprised that Janeway was willing to share technology with him. Like, she's been so reticent to share anything with any alien that they've met, but I kind of feel like she has so little leverage in this scene that it sort of makes sense.
I want my ship back, but in return, I will give you what you need to create the holodeck technology.
So often a deal like this is proposed, and it's immediately countered with, well, what's stopping the Bane from killing her and the rest of the crew anyway?
Right.
And no one says that, and I think that's intentional, right? You're sped through the end of this scene into the next, so you don't have time.
Yeah, it also doesn't seem like the Banes have really dedicated themselves to like the art of technology development and engineering the way a Harry Kim has. I kind of doubt that they could figure this all out.
Yeah, with how net-based their decorations tend toward.
Yeah.
They're a real net and barrel kind of society.
Yeah. Oh, I was just down at the net and barrel getting some new rocks tumbler glasses for my home bar cart.
I used to be into crafting, but the local net and barrel started giving to awful political organizations, and now I just buy online. Not that that's any better.
No. So in the holodeck, Brigitte's Nazi boyfriend is starting to get a little impatient. He's like, I don't know about this whole hostage thing, Beta Bane. I think we should probably start whacking these guys. The commandant was in my office in the previous episode and didn't exactly espouse like flawless Nazi ideology. So I'm sort of wondering if we should start to question the orders he's giving.
I love this scene. I wish we got more of them together because their tension is interesting and unintentionally funny. Like the idea that Taranj is at the bar, like drinking wine next to a box of grenades, like bitching about his circumstances, just delights me.
He's like, the guy I have the most in common with is the bad guy in this video game.
Yeah.
It's making me really hate my boss.
It's really fun. Seven of Nine is told to sing or die in this scene, and it is a great scene for Seven. She is such a badass here because she's like, not only no, won't I sing for you? I'm willing to die instead of sing. And not only that, once I'm dead, my ghost will haunt you as the Borg slowly assimilate your entire species. It is so hardcore.
When that moment arrives, remember me.
Seven is metal.
Yeah, she's metal as hell. We do not get another singing number from Jerry Ryan in this episode. And she's sort of saved by the bell because Alpha Bane calls down to Holodeck One and tells Beta Bane, like, hey, great news. Made a deal with their captain. They're going to give us their holodeck technology and we don't even need to continue with this war and fighting all the guys in the holodecks. So you, wrap things up down there, broker a peace between the Nazis and the allies. Like, we're going to do a ceasefire and a drawdown. And that's your job. Those are your marching orders, buddy.
As long as everyone's on the same page, things are going to work out great. And so everyone, like, scatters, and that leaves BLT's baby daddy and Taranjan here to discuss the aftermath. And this is his last chance to reject Carr's order as a form of weakness, right?
Yeah.
Carr sucks. He's not going to take the fight to the weak the way we are.
He's never embraced the Führer.
He doesn't get it, but somebody that does get it is the SS officer who really speaks explicitly about the ideology of Nazis in a way that, like, movies and TV shows almost never do.
Yeah, I was surprised and grateful for a scene like this. Like, this is what you want. This is the ideology made plain.
Like, Nazis are often depicted as cruel, and we're supposed to take it for granted that they're villains, but, like, it's often through their kind of, like, cruelty toward characters that we are following that we understand their villainy. Mm-hmm. This guy, like, says the, like, ideological underpinnings of the villainy also. And Beta Herojin is like, this is what I believe too, man. Like, I can't believe the fucking bad guy in the video game is, like, reconnecting me with my own personal raison d'etre. But he is.
We must be faithful to who we are.
Do you find it unlikely that anyone from the 1940s could convince anyone from the 2300s of anything?
I mean,
like, human or not, Bane or not, it just seems like there'd be such an intellectual disconnect across centuries that this feels miraculous. But the thing is, like, Taranj was already ready to be tipped over. Like, Taranj wanted this the whole time.
He's looking for an excuse.
Yeah.
And he's like,
you merely adopted a cruel and primitive ideology. I was born here.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it.
Yep.
Do it.
Do it.
Yep.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it.
Yep.
Do it.
Do it.
Yep.
Do it.
So everybody's like wrapping up outside. All the soldiers are kind of walking around. They've really dropped their guards.
Everyone's drinking root brew dogs together.
If you drink enough of it, you begin to like it.
It's insidious.
And it seems like it's going great. The Americans are walking around the town like they own the place and not worried about getting shot at.
Loosen up, baby doll. The war's almost over.
And then suddenly they're getting shot at.
Yeah. But we don't get to stay in this scene. We're reminded that Kenelix is still a thing. Where he rallies his drunken warriors and enlists them in whatever the cause is.
Yeah. At the EMH's urging, Canelix gets a bunch of Klingon warriors ready to run into 1940s Europe and Batleth Nazis, which...
Don't you wish maybe we didn't get this scene at all? Because this is such a transparent foreshadowing. Like, yeah. Hey, don't forget about Canelix and these guys.
Right.
Only to bring them in heroically later. I kind of don't want this scene at all because I want it to be even more of a surprise and a satisfying one at the very end.
It's a very, like, I feel like every scene with Neelix is like, hey, remember there's Neelix.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate.
This doesn't really seem to, like, advance the story much at all.
Yeah.
It's mostly there for comic relief, like, you know, him pretending to be Klingon-y while bossing these guys around.
Right.
Down in the engineering section, Janeway is working with Alpha Bane about how to shut down all the simulations, and it's... pretty complicated given how many holo projectors are installed throughout the ship. But we're back to the thing that Kim was suggesting right at the beginning, which is overload the network and we'll dissipate all the holograms. And they're talking this through when Beta Bane barges in with a rifle and shoots Alpha Bane in the heart, or where I presume he keeps his heart.
Twice.
Yeah.
Pretty rugged scene.
Double tap to the chest.
I didn't believe he was going to die until he was dead. I was surprised by this.
I was too. I'm surprised that Klingons don't make bulletproof armor.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that Beta Bane got the gumption to do this. I'm surprised that Alpha Bane didn't, you know, pull out an energy weapon and shoot back at all. He's just so taken by surprise.
The slowness that this scene unfolds in is part of what makes it so effective. Like, there's that pause after Carr dies, where Janeway's like,
what are you waiting for?
And when Taranj is like, you're next up as my prey.
Yeah.
I didn't believe Janeway was going to participate and run out of the room. I was surprised when she takes off. And then for much of the rest of the episode, he's like Pepe Le Pew to her lady skunk.
Right.
Like, she's running around like crazy and he's like methodically searching the ship for her.
That's going on. There's like fighting in the streets of St. Clair while the open decks of Voyager loom over everyone. Seven is working on her super grenade that's designed to stop the holo projections from working, which sort of feels like the same thing as what Kim is working on, but just on a like much smaller scale.
Mm-hmm.
Kim is up on the bridge working on that while, you know, Captain Janeway is like crawling through Jeffrey's tubes trying to get away from Beta Bane. And it's like a 8-minute countdown or something. Like, it's going to take a super long time for the plan to go into effect.
Why is it 8 minutes?
I don't know.
I never understand the utility of that.
Yeah.
What's the worst that could happen if it goes off too soon?
I don't know. Seven gets up ready to throw her Borg grenade and catches a bullet in the chest when she does it. And the grenade explodes and it just erases all of the holograms around. And it made me wonder, does the bullet in her chest disappear when the grenade goes off?
I mean, because there is no mention of her injury because of this shot afterward, I kind of assumed that to be the case, but a bullet went inside her.
Yeah.
It does not remove the damage of a bullet wound.
Didn't seem like it would, it wouldn't save her life, but it maybe would help her a little bit. I don't know.
I mean, also, she's made of different stuff.
That's true. That's true.
As an XB. So, I mean, maybe it's not as lethal as we would assume.
Janeway lays a pretty interesting trap for Beta Bane, which is she's running down the hallway and sees where the limits of the holo grid are because a corpse is lying like half in, half out. And she conceals that reveal by pulling the corpse like into the bounds of the hologrid so that when Beta Bane comes down that way, his gun like disappears out of his hands and she bonks him with a pipe and then picks up a gun and starts chasing him. And now she's got the upper hand and now the prey has become the hunter.
How much did you love the Star Trek version of war brutality? By seeing this guy's severed legs below the knee,
yeah,
and having it just be the boundary of the holo projector. Like, what an elegant solution to the gore problem, you know?
Yeah, probably couldn't show that gore on a syndicated show at that time.
But that is like a way that you experience war in a war film, is that kind of injury.
Yeah.
It's really well done.
So he comes around a corner on like one of the upper decks that looks down into Holodeck 1, where World War II is, and not where the Klingon one is. And he's watching Klingon warriors run through the streets of St. Clair using bat'leths on Nazis. And Janeway confronts him with a rifle.
This hunt is over. Tell your hunters to stand down. I'll use this if you force me to.
And I love that she shoots him. He goes for her and she shoots him. And we get to see him fall off this high level. It's like a digital body falling, but it was really cool.
Yeah. This is Kirk kicking the Klingon off of the cliff.
Yeah.
Of the Genesis planet.
She's had enough of him.
Yeah.
And that's when Harry's hollow emitter override goes and all the bad guys disappear. The village does not. I was kind of expecting it to go to Hollow Grid.
Yeah.
But it does not. It just goes to Village. And that is the end of the siege of St. Clair on the Voyager.
Yeah. Pretty wild. The button catches us up on the fallout from this conflict. A truce has been agreed to by both sides, both the Banes and the Voyagers. And Janeway keeps up her end of the bargain in the cargo bay. They meet up and she's carrying a gaming PC and she gives it to the Banes. You know, yeah. It's got like the cool cutout on the side and it's water cooled for some reason. It seems pretty dangerous to combine water and a computer, but yeah. There's like weird lighting inside it. It looks really neat.
It does look really cool. I mean, it's like, I don't know if I could really count on spending like $3,000 on something that's for playing fucking Duke Nukem or whatever. Like I will save my money and buy a $400 console. Thank you very much. But, you know, you do you, if that's what you're into.
It's horsepower culture though. You know, it's like, to a type of computer person, that is the hot rod.
Yeah. And then they start calling themselves Master Race, and you're like, PC Master Race makes me very uncomfortable. And they're like, no, it's just about being into computers. And then you find out that a lot of them are actually like alt-right freaks on the internet, and you're like, oh, huh, interesting.
Not all computer nerds, Ben.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullies, I don't like threats, and I don't like you.
Yeah, I like the episode, and I think due in large part to this final scene. It doesn't seem like this is going to work.
Yeah.
But Janeway as diplomat is supreme.
There's coffee in that holodeck technology on your own vessels.
She's honoring the deal that she had with Alpha Bane, and like none of these guys knew about that deal. They're like, what is this thing that you're giving us?
But it's almost like by showing deference and respect to the predecessor, she earns their respect or trust as it pertains to this deal.
Yeah, totally.
And they seem fine enough with accepting the gaming PC and fucking off, even though it seems like as soon as they got back on their ships, they could just destroy Voyager.
Yeah.
It seems pretty crippled.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like their ships are particularly great though, right?
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, equal to Voyager, I guess, but they're outnumbered.
I mean, they took over Voyager.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I watched the two halves of the Killing Game back to back, and I was surprised to learn that this was an instance where the episodes actual played back to back on TV when they came out.
Oh, interesting.
This was a same night Voyager special event.
Wow.
And I'm glad I got to consume it in that same way. I wonder if it hits differently if you watch it 1 week and then watch part two the next. But as one total package, I found it very satisfying. There were some logical things that fell apart in part two. Like the holes seemed more apparent in what was happening in part two than part one.
What seemed more apparent?
The holes.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure what you were talking about for a second there.
But the pace of story was so brisk that like you're just onto the next so quickly in a really effective way. It was, I mean, as a concept and as an execution, I thought it was great. It's one of my favorite two-parters in Star Trek. I think it's right up there with Year of Hell to me.
It's interesting to learn that it played on one night, because one thing we talked about with Best of Both Worlds is that when they like edited that together as one 90-minute thing and released it in movie theaters for like a special one night only, like the main thing about Best of Both Worlds is a scene that is broken by editing it together.
Yeah.
I think this plays way better in, you know, as one 90-minute thing. I almost wish we'd reviewed it that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, then we would, like, probably make our advertisers mad. I don't know.
Yeah, we can't do that. We can't screw up our production runway either.
Yeah.
We need every episode on the week that it's supposed to be out.
Yeah, indeed. But, yeah, I thought this was really terrific. And I think I like it more than Year of Hell. I feel like The Killing Game deserves a better, a higher place in the pantheon than Year of Hell, which I thought kind of fumbled the end in a way that this didn't.
I hope this isn't the end of the Banes either. I would like to keep encountering them throughout the series up until the very end. I think they are a fascinating species. And part of my fascination with them is that they are so different, one kind of Banes to another.
Well,
you never know what you're going to get with them.
We'll see what we can do, Adam.
All right.
All right, buddy. Why don't we go check out the Priority One inbox for this episode and see what we got in there.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental
income? Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, we've got a couple of Priority One messages here, beginning with one of a promotional nature.
Oh, okay.
And we actually have a script with this.
Okay.
I'm sending you the sides. You have them?
Yeah, I just hate showing up at one of these things and I see a bunch of guys that look like me but are handsomer and have better agents in the waiting room, you know?
Look, man, no one's got a better agent than we do.
That's true. That's true. Or a better friend, Adam.
Indeed. Don't try to make a copy of the script either.
Oh, yeah.
This company will know exactly where it came from.
Okay, so it looks like I start here.
Hold on, I'm gonna hit record on the camcorder here on the very cheap tripod.
Okay.
And whenever you're ready.
Benjamin Harrison, I'm 6'4", and I'm reading for Benjamin. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Have you heard of this new site, dongshop.biz?
Dongshop.biz?
Dongshop.biz, a new way to join the USS Hood Discord where FODs could gather and chat with a great community. They've got watch parties, games, and you can earn XP and badges by hanging out and participating. Provided by the strange AI-powered megalomaniacal bot, Agamus, who you can even chat with.
Sounds great. Dongshop.biz.
So visit dongshop.biz to join the Discord. I can't believe that was available.
I can't either. I'm shocked. There is a very sad purveyor of dildos right now, ready to go to market.
Yeah, yeah.
Using a substandard URL now because this one's taken.
Do you think that I'm going to get the part even though I sort of fumbled my pronunciation of megalomaniacal?
You know, why don't you give me another read and just, like, get weird with
just
it, you know?
Just do one for me?
Like, no bad decisions.
Okay. Dongshop.biz, a new way to join the USS Hood Discord where FODs can gather and chat with great community. They've got watch parties games, and you can earn XP and badges by hanging out and participating, provided by the strange AI-powered megalomaniacal bot, Agamus, who you can even chat with.
Hey, that was great. Brian, we'll call you back, okay? Brad, is it?
Adam, our second P1 is from Rich, and it's to Erica, and it goes like this. Erica, it's been 11 years since we watched Cause and Effect together on our third date. Now, hundreds of shuttlecraft and girders later, you are still the entrepreneur to my Previa.
Whoa.
The BLT to my B-dunks. The Beverly to my Doc Hollow day. When I think about the next 11 years, I can only say, sounds great. P- P.S. Ankylosaur, Ankylosaur, Ankylosaur. And we got that on the requested date.
I love that we've got two sounds greats in a row. And I think it's a testament to Robert Beltran that I feel like he is unimpressionable.
Yeah.
I can't do sounds great as good as he does, and I can't get even close.
No. It's an uncrackable impression code, I would say.
A lot of imagery of things going into other things there from Rich.
Yeah.
That's big fun. And congratulations on your 11 years together with Erica.
Yeah. Sounds like a fun relish.
Ben, our final priority one message is from Phil from the past. And it is to Ben and Adam. That message goes like this. Hey, guys. I'm sending myself a P1 from the past. I'm way back on season 7 of Deep Space Nine and churning my way through the end of the series before I jump on the Voy train. I'll probably send another P1 when I get to the TGG episode where this P1 airs. Hopefully my pace picks up. By the way, congrats on the time off for Adam and the new baby for Ben and family. I love the order of that, Phil. Great order of congrats there. First congratulating me for my time off and then to Ben for making a person with his wife.
Yeah. How did Phil even know about that if he's so deep in the stacks?
That's a great question. I don't know. Someone tipped Phil off.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, thanks to everyone who got a P1. And if you'd like to get one and support the show while you're at it, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and set one up today.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to give it to the captain for fumbling the gun when she was in the, you know, at the surgery console in Six Bay. That is, we talk about act drunk, and that's like a thing that is hard to nail. I think fumble is a really hard thing to nail, like making it look like you dropped something unintentionally and really selling that is a weirdly tricky acting challenge. And it's like a moment where she's also getting, you know, grazed with a bullet. So it's a tough moment for her, but it's such a funny, like, my gun, just conceptually. Yeah. And the extent to which she nails it in execution is just great. So I think that's my drunk Shimoda moment for the episode. How about you?
Interesting for a show depicting characters operating firearms that they're unfamiliar with, that there are no accidental firearms things happening. Yeah. There's no accidental grenade drop. There's no accidental explosion outside of something that's caused by an external force, I mean.
Yeah.
Like everyone, once they get the switch flipped, still kind of knows what they're doing.
When your gun is a key fob that's in your pocket, I bet you have to have just incredibly good trigger discipline.
Yeah.
Like it's just like a button that you could like accidentally set a pack of matches on and vaporize someone across the room.
When the stakes are that high, yeah, that's a great call. Ben, my drunk Shimoda is going to go to Neelix, and mostly just for his usage. I feel like Neelix should be in this episode more.
Yeah.
He's given the hero turn. He and the Klingons come to save the day at the very end. But there's something that feels unsatisfying about that moment because he's so tacked on in every other moment.
Yeah. It almost feels just like a, like, what if Nazis fought Klingons? Like,
yeah.
Nerd speculation, like a Batman versus Superman moment.
I mean, I love seeing a Nazi killed by a Batleth. That's fun.
I do really like that, too.
But
it was very jackable.
But, like, it was, there was a limit to the good feeling, you know?
Right, right.
Like, I feel like, I can't believe I'm saying this. I wanted more Neelix throughout this two-parter.
Yeah, I think that's apt. I mean, it was a shame to have him just get used as punchline.
Yeah.
You know, in the World War II prison camp movies, like the guy that can get anything is such an interesting guy. And that's kind of the utility of the Neelix character. And it would have been very interesting to see him put some of those skills to use in a World War II context.
It's true. Yeah.
Why don't we head over to gach.biz/game, Adam? I'm going to tell you about season 4, episode 20, buddy. It's an episode called Vis-a-Vis. An alien test pilot who has the capability of switching bodies manages to take Tom's place aboard the Voyager in order to escape the Lur. He's on the run from the Lur.
I got a great big body switch. I switch from birdie to birdie. Is this a freaky Ferdy?
Mm, yeah, I guess it
with
is.
With the birdies?
Are the birdies.
Ben, our runabout is on square 40 at the Game of Buttholes. The Will of the Caretaker.
Oh, that's where we left it.
A couple squares ahead is the Brone Zone square. I wonder if we're going to hit it.
Oh, I glimpsed that.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Do you glimpse the fullness of the Brone Zone square? Let's find out.
I glimpsed that Coco Nono that we could also hit.
Ben, I have landed us on the Brone Zone square.
I take it you're in charge here. Team Leader Brone, 4th Void Defense Contingent.
I gotta get a pump.
That's it, get it.
That is where we must communicate using glorified Vori tellings during the fullness of the episode.
Fuck. People are going to hate that. Also, like 85 to 90% chance that we forget to do it because we are going to be... This is the last thing we were recording before paternity leave for me.
Yeah.
And a long break for Adam. So, hey, if we don't remember to do that next week, forgive us, but maybe Wendy will remind us.
Yeah. I like her chances of remembering more than ours.
True. Well, if you want to glimpse that in its fullness, check back here next week. In the meantime, we got to thank Wendy Pretty for doing all of this great work to keep the show up and running while we have been away. We got episodes out for the people for a long time without you or I being there to lay them down. And that is largely due to Wendy's hard work and some special guest editors we're bringing in, and also something that is only possible because of the generous support of the Friends of DeSoto. We are very lucky to have a job as silly as this that also can accommodate a break like this. So for everyone who has gone to MaximumFun.org/join and set up a membership, thank you so much.
I mean, it's the fullness of the Uxbridge Shimoda org that makes the whole thing possible.
True. Save that kind of talk for next week, though.
I mean, we all worked extremely hard to make this happen, and I think it is because we all care about you having this time, and we are all really excited about this new chapter in your life, and I'm so happy for you and your wife. I know you both are going to be great parents. That is going to be an incredibly fortunate kid. I wish more people had parents like I know you and your wife to be, and I'm just really happy for you guys.
Thanks, bud. I'm just filled with gratitude right now for you and for Wendy and for all of the folks that support what we do in ways big and small. Grateful for Bill Tilly for running the social medias at Greatest Trek on Instagram and Twitter. Grateful for Nick Ditmore, who made our artwork. Grateful for Adam Ragusea, the Goose, who made our original theme music. Dark Materia, who gave us access to the Picard song all those years ago. I'm a gratitude man today, buddy.
Sure are.
We'll be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager, where Adam and I are maybe too high to remember how the Vori talked.
Is that a part of this episode that I wasn't aware of? We're also going to get very high?
It's episode 420, baby. We don't have a choice.
Oh, shit. That's right. Okay. We got to remember. We need Wendy to remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Make it so.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.